B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
That was terrible, Mike. That finish to the Bray Wyatt-Seth Rollins Hell in a Cell match was absolute garbage. Like, so the sledgehammer gets somebody disqualified in a Hell in a Cell match. Those are the rules now. You can hit somebody with a ladder, a toolbox, a chair, but once the sledgehammer comes out, that's the end, right? These are the new rules of WWE. What was a fantastic, fantastic pay-per-view with a hiccup here or there that had four matches going into it ends with that trash finish. Mm-hmm. That just, like, if you don't want to beat him, if you don't want to beat The Fiend, if you don't want to beat Bray Wyatt, then don't put the match together.
Right.
Just don't do it. If you don't want to beat Seth Rollins, don't put him in there. Put him in there with Baron Corbin again. Or put him in there with somebody that you do want to beat. Because that is just an unacceptable scenario where now we've had two straight years of the Hell in a Cell main event have a disqualification, and last year it was Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman had a no contest because Brock Lesnar interfered. Just garbage, Mike. Just absolute trash, Mike.
Yep. Mike,
go.
I'm with you. It's just no need for that. What we need an explanation on the Hell in a Cell here. Are there allowed to be disqualifications? Because the first ever Hell in a Cell, you had The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels in 1997 and winning the match because his brother Kane comes out. Is Shawn Michaels there for the debut because there's a no disqualification? And many other times it's happened over time. Who the hell cares if a sledgehammer comes out? What a joke, and good for the fans of Sacramento letting the WWE universe hear it, and the authority and everyone, they're chanting AEW.
And that they're booing as the pay-per-view is going off the air. As
which
the
was
show
overall
is fading to black, you hear boos. And no, those are not boos of The Fiend is getting the upper hand on Seth Rollins. Those are boos at the finish of the match. And while Seth was spamming his finish on Bray Wyatt, the crowd was booing and turning against him. And they tried to fade that down real quick.
Frustration, you know, absolutely. And just, I don't understand. Overall, it was a good show, and they ruined it.
A really good show. It was a really strong pay-per-view.
Yep.
And they finish it with that garbage.
Yep. And it's like, wow. Now people are going to remember this pay-per-view because of that finish, and that just puts a damper on the whole thing. So, you know, it's going to obviously change the grading of how I think we viewed it originally, but this is not a good finish for WWE. A bad, bad decision here, the way they did that. And my theory too, Jimmy, I don't know, I just thought of this real quick. The official, Rod Zapata.
What's that?
He was also the official for the main event at WrestleMania 35, where, you know, the finish was a little iffy, if you will. Just a theory. I don't know. Maybe he's kind of being buried to be the bad guy out there to make that DQ call and get the heat from the fans. And then maybe you could build something up in a storyline with him. So maybe this is his punishment to put him in that position there. I wouldn't be shocked if we do see something like that down the line. But still, a bad, bad decision here by WWE on what was pretty much a banner week for the company.
There are a million finishes. The finish they did tonight for Hell in a Cell was terrible. It was awful.
Yep.
I go back to it. You have Seth Rollins who's spamming his finishes on Bray Wyatt. Then comes the ladder, no disqualification. Then comes the chair. Then comes a toolbox. We haven't seen a toolbox in a while.
No toolbox. Yep.
But then the sledgehammer, the sledgehammer is the one that gets you disqualified, gets the match thrown out. Unless, unless if they had done a referee stoppage, I still wouldn't have liked it, but it would have been a clear-cut finish instead of a disqualification.
Mm-hmm.
Just not the way that it's just not the way that you want to send. What happened to this company sending its fans home happy?
Right.
And even if you believe that Seth Rollins should have won tonight, and I'm not one of those people, let him beat him. Do you know?
Right.
Do you know what my friend texted me before the show began and said, you know how Seth Rollins beats Bray Wyatt the Fiend?
How's that?
You take his mask off.
Yeah, sure. Kind of like a Dracula.
That's his kryptonite. That's the difference between the two personalities is the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you do. I called them booking Seth Rollins like Hulk Hogan earlier. And when Bray Wyatt did this, the neck snap thing, it reminded me of Zeus, who you'll remember from the No Holds Barred movie. Zeus had one weakness. He had the glass eye. So Hogan hit him in the glass eye a couple times, slammed him, leg drop, 1, 2, 3. That was the way that you got to Zeus. You raked his eyes, hit him in the glass eye, and then you beat him. The way you beat the Fiend Bray Wyatt is clear. You take the mask off, and he loses all his power.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. It was such a great and simple point. And it should have been so, like, it should have been in the story. When they're at that finish point where Seth is like, I don't know what to do with this guy. I've hit him with the curb stomp, you know, 10 times, and that's an unofficial number. I hit him with a pedigree, because that was the sequence that he beat Braun Strowman with last week, at the last pay-per-view, was three curb stomps, a pedigree, and then a fourth curb stomp, and that was it for Strowman.
Mm-hmm.
So after you've hit the 10th, 11th, 12th curb stomp, what do? You take the mask off, and you see if that works. You just think through it. Think through it. If you're this architect, which they mentioned, he's an architect. He's building chairs and ladders and all this other bleep and toolboxes. But the sledgehammer, that's the move that gets you disqualified. We could go back through the annals of time and all the Hell in the Cells and say how many times they used a sledgehammer. My second favorite Hell in a Cell ever was the one in Miami, WrestleMania 28. I was there live for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Undertaker and Triple H with Shawn Michaels as the special referee. I screwed it up the last time I said it. I said it was something totally different. But they used a sledgehammer in that match. Hell, Shawn super kicked Undertaker into a pedigree during that match that we all thought that was the end of the streak.
Right.
No disqualification there.
Everyone on the edge of your seat. Yep. Yeah. You know, and it's just like, here we are. Yeah,
we're
just
7 minutes into this podcast and we're complaining about the finish, which is not what I wanted to do. I had this whole beautiful write-up about how great Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch was, how excited I was that Charlotte Flair won her 10th championship, how good this match was, and the tornado match with Roman and Daniel Bryan was great, and even the OC and AJ Styles, and you know, I was upset that Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss lost the titles, but you know what? The Kabuki Warriors had a great match, and Ali almost beats Randy Orton and counters the RKO. I had all this positive stuff to do, and we've now spent 8 minutes bitching about the finish.
Because WWE... Yep, and they put a damper on everything. That was, by the way, that was my match of the night too, the Ali Randy Orton one. But it just and now it's a terrible taste, and people are and rightfully so pissed off. It just had a bad feeling from the start of it with the I don't know how you felt about the red lights. I did not like them dimmed down there. I thought that was unnecessary. I understand the whole spell factor and so forth, but if Seth Rollins is going to beat Bray Wyatt, okay, the mask thing, I'm fine with that, but if you're going to let him absolutely annihilate him with the weapons, go ahead. Let him pin him at that point. Let him submit. Do something. Don't do a damn DQ. What a stupid finish. Awful. Absolutely awful. You are in a hell in a cell. It's not heaven. It's hell in a cell. It's a bad place to be. What do you want? Terrible.
It's violence. It's violence.
And they absolutely just went against their whole theme of the match and the pay-per-view for that matter. It's violence, and they went against it. So you're absolutely a 100% contradiction here at WWE. Shame on you.
And especially since that opening match had excellent violence and good use of violence.
Yep.
And realistically, that Sasha Banks Becky Lynch match is in my top five of favorite Hell in a Cell matches.
Really?
And this one is now the worst because of that finish. The worst Hell in a Cell match, by the way, in my opinion, was they did like 56 minutes of Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and it was terrible. And they had back-to-back, if my memory serves, in two straight years of Hell in a Cell matches at the Bad Blood pay-per-view, which I think was in June of 03 and 04, if my memory serves. Okay. They did Triple H and Kevin Nash, which was terrible. And then they did 56 minutes of Shawn Michaels versus Triple H, and it was terrible. This is now the number one worst Hell in a Cell match ever.
Mm-hmm.
Just as far as the red lights go, I didn't mind them early on, and I thought maybe, okay, it's going to be a quick match. It'll be fine. It's like when Kane debuted in his first match at Survivor Series, I believe the same night as the Montreal Screwjob. I think his match with Mankind had the red lights, but it was only like 5 minutes, so it didn't bother. This match went like 20, maybe
this is a,
15,
this is a
20.
Yeah,
and just no.
Mm-hmm.
Just not
too
good.
Much. Right, way too much. And this was a main event, the Kane Mankind one. That was a undercard match. Right. And, you know, like you said, 5 minutes. For 20 minutes here, I'm looking back at it right now. You're absolutely right. It was red lights the whole match there for 14 minutes and 9 seconds, too, by
that's
the way.
That's longer than I remember it, but okay.
Yeah, but that includes entrances, too. So about roughly 11 minutes, give or take. So just still, I don't know, a little too much with the red. I know some people liked it. If you did, all the power to you. I think it's a personal preference thing. But it just seemed like it set the tone for... I don't know. They didn't really have a lot of chemistry either for a little bit. I didn't think there was much happening in that match. I know Seth Rollins got Bray Wyatt going up against the cage outside, and then Bray Wyatt had the Sister Abigail outside and in the ring too. Thought that would have been it. But then when he got them all pinned up there with the weapons and the sledgehammer and then ready to, you know, bang it on him, for the DQ, that's where obviously a couple minutes before that, it just started to go south. You can kind of tell it was not going in a good position.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Do you want to talk about the rest of the show? Do you want to talk about the good of the show? Or do we want to bitch about this finish for another 10 minutes?
Let's bring out the positives there. But I think that was the latest ever we've done that pre-rec intro, right?
Yeah, that finish was just so terrible.
It sucked.
It just ruined a good pay-per-view.
It was unnecessary.
It was just totally. It's frustrating because you touched on it. Like, we had a really good week of wrestling. We had a really good span of days of like good quality wrestling, and then that garbage. And even Friday night, Kofi losing, which I went back and I watched it, and I watched it a second time and I was aggravated, and I watched a third time I was more aggravated. Mm-hmm. But I understand that they want to do Brock and Kane Velasquez at the Saudi show now.
Yeah.
Not WrestleMania as we discussed, which hey, the Prince wants it, the Prince gets it.
Of course. Just get it out of the way.
We need fans to start a GoFundMe page.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
So that we can outbid the Prince and we can get our matches, the matches that we want. But here's the problem is that we as fans would never actually be able to decide what we want.
Well, we were told that at the beginning of the year, but that really hasn't had any indication. I think if WWE were smart, Jimmy, with that finish at the Hell in the Cell main event, they would have listened to the fans, sent someone down, reversed the decision, and get him right back in the ring right there if they were smart. But they just absolutely alienated a lot of fans, including myself. And again, to have the AEW chance like that, and then the booing, as you mentioned, going to black, that speaks volumes right there. That really does. Not a good look for WWE. They've done changes on the fly. We know that. Why couldn't they do it here? Why? Why not? You know? I mean, I don't know if you know the answer to that, but or if anyone does, but why couldn't you? People that listen to this podcast from WWE, why? Why didn't you do it? You ruined it for the fans. You ruined it.
It's one of the big problems is they booked this attraction. They booked this great match, this great idea. And then they get to the day of, and they don't know how to get out of it, quote unquote. They don't understand that you can beat somebody and have them not look bad.
I know.
Would anybody be upset if Seth Rollins got beat by Bray Wyatt tonight?
No, I would have been. In fact, I predicted Bray Wyatt would win, and I would have been fine if he had lost. No problem, too. I would have been fine if Seth Rollins had won in a pin or a submission, Jimmy.
Well, that's kind of the point, is if they had thought through it, they could have come up with a way to make Seth Rollins look better in defeating the Fiend than what they gave you tonight. But they couldn't. They couldn't. Paul Heyman is known as the most creative mind in wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're starting a company. You want Paul Heyman as your booker.
Sure.
Paul Heyman's responsible for Raw, so he is in part to blame for this finish. And we all know that it's Vince being like, GG pal, how do we get out of this? Can't beat the Fiend. Can't beat him. Can't beat Seth Rollins. He's the champion. How do we get out of it? Instead of finding an end point, like, what is your end point? What is your end game? What is your start? What is your end? And we'll fill in the middle as we go along. It's right. Not that difficult. If you go back to their last, when you can figure out their metrics for pay-per-views, this is the last time that they really drew, is John Cena versus The Rock. They started at WrestleMania in Atlanta. Rock was the referee. Miz retained over Cena. The next night, they announce Rock and Cena are fighting next year in Miami for WrestleMania 28. Then, we didn't know it at the time, but they had a rematch scheduled, and that was for WrestleMania 29 in New York. Yep. So you had three WrestleManias worth of booking long-term, assuming health. And it drew the most money as far as pay-per-view buy rates than it had in a long time.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Since I think the highest buy-rated WrestleMania was Vince and Donald Trump in Detroit. Yeah. I think that
for obvious reasons. Yeah, for obvious reasons. That makes sense.
But what they need to continually understand is that long-term booking is a key to success. And there are ways to do your storytelling and beat people. You can do it. You just have to think of the creative way to do it.
Right.
And they either choose not to, or Vince is just stubborn and like, oh, we'll do it this way. They'll like it because I say they like it, but they're not.
Right.
They're not.
And now you just absolutely alienated fans. And I would imagine, I don't know what the Fox reaction is right now to that. I mean, maybe Fox, from their perspective, they're like, okay, well, we don't really care so much because those guys are going to Raw. So, fine. Go ahead. Let them do whatever they want. Or, on the other hand, they're like, oh, boy, I don't know about this. But I'd imagine I'd go with the former on that it is going to be the situation. These two guys would remain on the Raw brand, especially without the title changing hands.
Well, the good news is if you're frustrated with the WWE product, as Matt Jackson 13 on Twitter, blue check mark, says, AEW will be back on Wednesday for a new episode of Dynamite on TNT.
Which will be in Boston.
Which we'll be there at Aganis Arena. Let's float through this show as 18 minutes of bitching about a finish to a match is more than enough, I think. For what was a really good pay-per-view, Mike. This was a really good show. I really enjoyed this pay-per-view. Opening match, again, top five Hell in a Cell matches I've ever watched. Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch. Banks taps out after T-Bone, after a disarmer, following a T-Bone suplex from the top rope onto a stack of chairs. These two beat the hell out of each other. Ladders, chairs, cage, kendo sticks. No sledgehammer, though. That would have been a disqualification. That would have been too much. But we even saw a chair shot to the head, which, you know, I respect it, but these two beat the hell out of each other. It was good violence. It was smart violence. The spot that everybody was talking about was three kendo sticks wedged into the corner of the Hell in a Cell. Chair stacked on top of it. Sasha Banks sitting upright. Becky Lynch delivers a drop kick. A lot of effort for that one spot, but it was a good spot. Good match. Good violence.
Yeah, and the opening match, too, for the whole show definitely set the tone for everything, and that definitely carried the momentum from what we saw. I thought that Sasha Banks was going to win. I think that was a surprise to a lot of people, too, with Becky retaining. And, you know, just you watch both of them in there, two of the, you know, of the top five, I'd say, female performers ever in the WWE, and just to see them work together so well, they know each other so well, it was a real treat to watch that match. And Becky Lynch, just every time I watch her, I appreciate her more. Obviously, not that I don't ahead of time, but I just appreciate everything that she does, the way she is able to work with an individual in the ring, and her mic skills, we know that too, with the Irish accent, being the badass and so forth, the whole package on her. She's probably the hottest one in the company right now, and she proved that tonight, retaining the Raw Women's Championship.
I'll tell you what I think the real key to this match was, the selling of Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. When they went into something, you felt their pain. It's the thing I was telling you about Jim Ross being the announcer.
Sure.
Jim Ross, when he calls the action, or when he called the action when he was in his prime, the way he verbalized it, he made you feel their pain. The camera shots and the expression of pain on Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, you felt their pain. It was just such good stuff. Such good violence. One of my favorite spots was Sasha putting Becky's arm in between the door entrance and slamming the door as it's chained together shut on Becky's arm. Just good, smart, innovative, using the cage as a weapon. Just so good. Just so, so good. So, so good.
Yeah, yeah, and just, again, these two are very gifted, and again, I really thought that Sasha was going to win, and a lot of people did too, Jimmy. The odds were in her favor there. Were you surprised that Becky retained, or were you expecting Sasha to win this one?
So I thought I might have said something different on a previous episode, and I apologize if I did because I'm being inconsistent, but
no,
I think when I came to the conclusion that Seth and Becky are going to stay on the same show, I came to the conclusion that they're both walking out as champions.
Right.
So, to answer your question, I wasn't surprised when I hit the reality of pro wrestling, and that is they're not breaking up Becky and Seth because they're engaged, and unless they're both going to SmackDown, unless they're going to switch everything, but I don't think that that's going to happen. Right. So it kind of leads to where do Becky and Sasha go? Because we've got a draft coming up.
Right.
And I think it means that Becky is staying, Sasha is staying, and
Seth Rollins will stay.
Seth Rollins is staying.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not. Yeah. See, I thought I really thought Becky would go to SmackDown.
And I didn't think that was the right call to move her to SmackDown.
No, I think the call right now is Charlotte's going to SmackDown. That's
Charlotte is staying on SmackDown. That I think we've known for a while.
Yeah. Now is a new champion there. Rather, you could put Bayley back to Raw, but I think you do, if you're going to have Charlotte staying on SmackDown, then you probably do need Becky on Raw to even that out. Because as you hinted on Friday, after the first ever SmackDown show, just at the very end, you made a comment that Raw right now is kind of like the fourth most important show.
It is, so, and that to me, Mike. That is fascinating because they're paying. This is what doesn't get talked about enough. They're paying $1 billion for the next 5 years for wrestling, and they're number four. They're fourth on the food chain.
But that helps, though, if you have someone with the star power, Becky Lynch on Raw. That helps big time.
It should, and I think to a degree that's why they put Becky with The Rock, and Becky Lynch has been your hottest act for more than a year now.
Oh yeah,
and it's months. Still. I still think that you do not take that Raw Women's Championship off of her,
no,
unless she's going to SmackDown and she's winning the SmackDown Women's Championship right away. But I'm a believer that long term storytelling, especially if you've got a match of Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey in your back pocket for WrestleMania in Tampa, and in my mind. That's the match that should have happened this year in New York, but they wanted to put Charlotte in there because they didn't have Ronda past WrestleMania in New York.
Right.
So they needed to say, well, Charlotte was in the main event, Becky was in the main event.
Right.
And the win and the loss didn't really matter, but when you're coming around to WrestleMania in Tampa, Becky, a year as champion, hasn't been beaten for the title, and now here comes Ronda Rousey with the built-in storyline that, hey, I was only down for a two count. You didn't pin me one, two, three. So now we're doing our one-on-one match.
And that's your referee again there, Dan Zapata, or Nick Zapata, whatever the heck his name is. So, he's the guy that caused the problem tonight with the DQ, and you can blame him for that one there when he comes back on the when Ronda Rousey comes back rather for television side.
And let's not
I just need someone to blame. Sorry.
Let's not blame. No,
all right, I'm just frustrated. I'm sorry.
Vince McMahon is the one to blame for that main event.
No kidding, of course.
Let's keep this Zahada, whatever. Zahada. Wasn't he the steroid guy? Didn't he distribute the steroids back in Vince McMahon's steroid when he beat the government? He'll tell you he beat the government.
Rod Zapata? This guy? He looks young.
Zahada, Zapata, Zapolis, I don't know.
Do that in your own time.
I don't know. I appreciate you blaming somebody, though.
Yeah, I'm just pissed.
I think the next, if we go in order of matches, the tornado match with Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan was awesome.
Not bad.
Eric Rowan, Luke Harper, they're a good team. They should never split them up. They should have had a longer run with the tag titles, but they got hurt, so I get it. But this was a really good match. And after that opening match, you're like, oh, how are they going to follow this? Daniel Bryan, that's how.
I want to see Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan work together more often. They are really good, whether it's a tag team or one-on-one. Both of those two guys together, they work wonders. It was really good stuff in there. And I'd love to see them have a good run as a tag team here. But
just a quick theory as to why they might be together and why they might have a good run together.
Yeah.
Bryan's on a pitch count.
Mm.
So you put him in a tag team. And Roman Reigns' health is kind of spotty day to day.
True.
Because he's still recovering from leukemia treatments.
It's been less than a year since he was out for the duration, yeah.
So you've got two performers who are really good. You put them in a tag team, you put them on pitch counts.
Yeah.
I mean, they went balls to the wall tonight, but generally speaking, you know, save some of the bumps in the bump card.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like that. And I think that they're both really good in the ring and star power that definitely works in their advantage, too. So fan favorites. Hope we see more of them, though, down the line.
And at the end, you have Bryan turn on Roman, and then there's
absolutely
3 months of programming right there.
Yep, absolutely.
Randy Orton defeated Ali.
Mm.
Really good match. I'm not an Ali guy, but really good match. the way that he reversed the RKO by just standing on his hams on his hands was excellent. I kind of thought that when Ali went for his 450 inverted whatever flippity doo-dah 205 live move, that Orton was going to spring up and RKO him right there.
Yep.
But that didn't happen. But RKO wins it for Randy Orton in that case.
I took a new appreciation here to Ali tonight, and from what I saw there, and maybe it's just Randy Orton too, because, you know, as we had a whole episode on him a couple of months ago, it just really, he is a very underappreciated performer in the ring. And, you know, he does make everyone better in there with him. That's just him being a well-seasoned vet. So maybe that's why Ali had the better match, probably the best match I could never think of for Ali in his career in the WWE. So good for him. A good spot right there. Had a good showing, and I would love to see these two guys go at it again. I think Ali, though, Jimmy, I'd like to see him have a run as like an Intercontinental or U.S. champion at some point down the line. Sooner than later.
Ali's got a good backstory. He was on Chris Jericho's podcast in December or January and talked about his background as a Chicago police officer. Really good background. If you haven't checked that out, you should check that out. Good match for the women's tag belt. I was upset at the fact that Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss lost because they're favorites of mine. More specifically, Crazy Chick Nikki Cross is a favorite of mine. The Green Mist comes back after a long absence. WWE fans will remember Tajiri as using the Green Mist. I think some NWA WCW fans will, like myself, will remember the great Muda using the Green Mist. And Ryan Johnston had a funny tweet about Ryan Johnston, who does the hockey show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And I think he still does the LOL games, the LOL minor league hockey games.
And Boston Cannons lacrosse, too.
And Boston Cannons lacrosse. Shout out Boston Cannons. I was once an employee of Major League Lacrosse way back when.
Oh, really?
Yes. Asuka spit green mist into Nikki Cross, kick to the head, and your new tag team champions are Kabuki-ish. The Kabuki Warriors.
Yep.
Good match there. Strowman, I don't care about. He's going to do something.
They also need the titles, too, by the way. They need the titles, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
Thought just popped in my head. I wonder if the Kabuki Warriors are going to be the transition to get the tag team titles back on Sasha and Bayley.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then
sense.
You can have them do both shows, or you can keep them on one show, whatever.
Because as we know, Asuka has no problem dropping titles to people.
This is true. She'll lose to anybody.
Although
Game the player. first 914 days, she didn't want to do a job to anybody. So there's that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Gable and Corbin, good match. Didn't really care about it.
Yeah, didn't care. But you know, again, more appreciation for Gable. I could have. It was kind of a popcorn match.
So, what did you think about the entire match of Charlotte Flair and Bayley?
Well, I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I had some technical difficulty with my WWE network like a lot of people did. So I was in and out, probably saw a good three quarters of it. But overall, I thought I kind of felt like they buried Bayley a little bit. Having her tap out Friday on SmackDown, and then here she is tapping out again. I know that's Charlotte's finishing move. It was just real Charlotte domination from what I thought. And I think she was the heavy favorite for a lot of people. She was my pick to win the SmackDown Women's title over Bayley. I don't like how Bayley, you know, went away crying at the end. You know, I'm sure there's some real life stuff in that story of her crying, being upset and having the title stripped off her.
I think
in general.
It was a dig at Sasha.
Okay.
Because remember, there was the report post WrestleMania that Sasha was throwing a fit because they lost the tag titles, which they actually discussed on the Sasha Banks Chronicle.
Oh, and it's the Australian twins.
And as far as the Chronicle goes, Sasha tells the story that report sent her into a mental tailspin, to which the reporter came out and apologized for it and said that the next time that he gets a piece of information like that, he's not going to go with it.
Yeah. Again,
which
so there you go,
I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of details in that documentary which go against some of the intel that I have on things.
Okay.
But watch that. When you have a network that has 3 million people, you get to kind of tell the story as you see it.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm actually I'm actually glancing through text messages to see if I want to reaccount that or not. But
go ahead if you feel like it. But you know, just with Charlotte's match there against Bayley, it just seemed like, again, where we were talking on Friday after the first SmackDown, that they're introducing a new audience to this. And at the end of the match, Michael Cole making it very clear, and Corey Graves for that matter too, that Charlotte is a 10-time champion. And they hinted that, you know, there's going to be sooner than later that we're going to have to proclaim her as one of the best ever. And, you know, we kind of knew that was coming anyways, but now with the new audience here for the Fox side of SmackDown, they're making that very clear that this was Charlotte's defining moment, and she is probably going to be the signature superstar on SmackDown, certainly for the women's side. Right now it's Brock Lesnar, but she's a very close 1A.
So I thought the match was okay.
Mm.
I didn't expect Charlotte to win here.
Really?
I thought that if they were going to have Charlotte win the title, that they were going to do it on SmackDown, whether it be, you know, this Friday or future SmackDown. I thought they would save that moment for Fox TV. I was obviously wrong. I, of course, love the fact that Charlotte won and became a 10-time champion, because it's now time to draw ratings season. Because the last few summers, Charlotte has kind of taken them off and done media appearances and ESPN, the magazine, and seemingly has had work done every summer.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that she's the champion again, because there are certain performers that just, I feel like, need the championship.
Yeah.
It looks like AJ Styles not having a championship just looks weird to me.
Right.
Charlotte Flair not having a championship looks weird to me. And Ric Flair taking the robe off and not having a championship looks weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so accustomed.
Hulk Hogan walking down the aisle not having a championship looks weird to me. There are just those performers that I think that the championship just fits with them.
Yeah, it fits them perfect. Yeah, I could see that. But you know what? On the flip side, though, I know you mentioned the Flair thing, and that made me think there with the robe and her, too, with Charlotte, her robe as well. Like, that's the attraction there, even without a title around the waist. So there's still just that fancy and you know, elaborate and so forth, even if they don't have the title. But they do. They are the kind that really are the torch carriers of the championships for the company. So she's definitely going to be the face of SmackDown on the women's side, hands down.
Of course she is. And one of the things, too, that in the last month or so I've noticed, when she does her entrance, she doesn't do the cartwheel in front of the hard camera anymore.
She goes
up the steps, pulls the referee over, and tells the referee, open the ropes for me, which is something that her dad used to do.
Yep, and take the robe off.
And tells the official, hey, I'm taking my robe off. You better grab it before it hits the ground.
Right.
Just, you know, sneaky thing. I will be interested to see, because I feel like the Bayley character hasn't changed who she is. She still thinks that the fans are behind her. She still thinks she can hug people. She's still doing the inflatable Hoosie Mabobbies. So in Bayley's character's mind, she hasn't done anything wrong. She still thinks she has the fans behind her. And in the same way, Charlotte Flair is still acting like a villain, even though she's getting some cheers. So those two characters are kind of in areas of gray. So I'm interested to see where they go next. So is Charlotte going to be a full-on face, or is she going to be where she's better, I think, which is as a villain?
She's much better as a heel, yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, she has to be the heel, especially as a champion, because you're going to want an underdog to chase her, like kind of like Kofi Kingston when he was chasing after the title for Daniel Bryan earlier this year. So give someone another opportunity, SmackDown, for that side there when Charlotte does get ready to debut there. Maybe you have, I don't know, we don't know who's
you'd
going
there.
You
have to
go
through the list of
the roster,
the face of women's workers to see who Charlotte matches up against.
Right, right.
And I'm not sure that they have that. I mean, there's a reason, like Natty, we love Natty, but not really. Like, we need a unique matchup, and maybe that's, maybe they call somebody up. Maybe they draft somebody. Maybe Shayna Baszler finally gets her shot at the main roster, and we have a Shayna Baszler Charlotte match.
Sure.
But Shayna Baszler is important to NXT. So you really can't take her away from there.
Maybe you wait for her until after WrestleMania. But you're right. This could happen at the draft, too. So definitely a chance to put someone over. That's a big opportunity right there.
Mike, do you have anything else from Hell in a Cell? Do you have anything that's on your mind as we wrap up the program?
Just, you know, obviously the big takeaway was the end of it with Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt. I will say this, though, Jimmy. If there is to take away a positive from the match and the whole finish and so forth, you look at The Fiend and, you know, the push he's had over the last month and a half or so, SummerSlam. But now we get to learn a little more about him. And it's a good character build. So maybe you get a rematch with Seth Rollins. Hopefully, I'd imagine you would. You probably get two or three up until the end of the year. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. That's the only positive I'm trying to look at it here, even with that bad finish, that these two get it again and we get more of The Fiend, because I think the people want The Fiend. I think that's what Vince McMahon was trying to, you know, figure out here, that we have to have a DQ because people want The Fiend here. And I don't agree with it. I'm furious over it, but that's the only way I can look at it here, that it's a character build for Bray Wyatt and The Fiend character.
I don't want to see this match again. I do not want to see Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt again. No, because they've proven to me that they don't want to beat either one of them.
What about this, though? You know, the second time,
so, like, I'm out on seeing this match again.
So the day after WrestleMania, the Raw after WrestleMania, there was a loud AEW chant there in Brooklyn. And here we are again. Do you think the fans, like, do you think they overreacted? Just emotion got the best of them? Or, I don't know, just was it the right thing to do? I'm trying to.
I will look for it.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who liked this finish.
I don't either. I can't think of that. But I as an overreaction, just to pose that question.
But
sure,
so, Mike, this is why this stuff happens. This is why people chant CM Punk during shows.
Right.
Because this is the way for the WWE universe to use their terms, because they said for many, many years, we have a say in what happens on their television show.
Yeah.
Even though we haven't, right? Daniel Bryan was an exception, and the only reason why that happened is because CM Punk walked out, right? Because Bryan's not, they're doing Orton and Batista.
Right.
Right? Like, people.
Yeah, it's like, who cares?
So, it's a long way of saying
to play,
is,
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
No, please
that's
do. Please, Mike, I'd love that's for
all.
You to disagree with me. Love it. Love it.
No, I agree.
Bring
just,
it. It'll make the show a lot better.
But the
point is, Mike, is that the way that the fans voice their frustration is to yell something, or, I mean, maybe they like the fact that they're yelling something. Maybe the play is for the fans to just walk out, say nothing and leave.
God.
Because and like that happened when Charlotte beat Sasha Banks in Boston.
Right.
The fans are like, "What?" And they just got up and left because they were pissed. Meanwhile, me and Spalding are shrieking in joy at the fact that Charlotte wins another championship and overcomes all of the odds and beats Sasha Banks in her hometown with all the fans chanting for her before her music plays.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. It's happened before. It happened tonight, and you know what? It's definitely going to happen again. But it just puts a damper on what was a good show, and now it has soured the taste of that show because of the finish.
Just
simple as that.
WWE is a company of moments. Not all of them are good. Some of them, like tonight's finish of the main event with Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt, was really, really bad.
Yeah, not good.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart, where I will be angrily tweeting about how much this match finished. I don't know. It sucked. We'll talk to you next week.
Coming up now, less than a month away, Sunday, November 3rd, 7:30, WWE Hall of Famer Mick Foley heads to Kowloon Comedy, Route 1 North in Saugus. You know the deal. For tickets, you have to call 781-484-6002, and someone will be on the other line for you there. You'll actually speak to someone to order the tickets. VIP, $75, includes a meet and greet with Mick Foley and priority seating, and then your regular reserve seats are $25. I think you're crazy not to go for the VIP. So Mick Foley tickets charge by phone, and it is 781-484-6002, Sunday, November 3rd, Kowloon Comedy, Route 1 North, Saugus, Massachusetts.
Mick Foley is my favorite wrestler of all time, and you will not be disappointed to meet him, interact with him, watch the show. It's a fabulous show. I was out in Chicago, watched it there. It was different than from the last time he was in Boston doing the Kowloon show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.